I'm going to tell you about a paper that we wrote in May with my advisor, Sean Hartnell, and postdoc, Guy Gurari. So the topic is transport, and by transport, I will specifically restrict myself to talking about electrical conductivity in this talk. So the motivation is that V equals IR is one of the first things we learn in high school physics. But computing R from first principles is a very notoriously nuanced problem in many contexts. We barely have any exact examples in which we can compute it. For example, in metals, the resistivity depends on the details of how translation invariance is broken. It depends on disorder and dirt in your system. So we were able to identify a relatively nice system in which you can compute the conductivity exactly. And I'll tell you what the theory we considered is. It's a 2+1 dimensional relativistic field theory. Okay. And the reason we are able to do the computation exactly is because we are cheating a little bit and we are working in a large n limit. Okay, so we only sum up a certain subclass of Feynman diagrams that are leading in n. Okay, and we will also work at finite temperature. So the object that we will compute is a sigma mu nu, so spatial momentum set to zero, as a function of omega over t. So it'll be a conformal field theory. It's a relativistic conformal field theory. But it'll be arbitrary function of lambda. Lambda is the coupling. Okay, and this will be proportional to n, so we'll be computing 1 over n times this. Sigma mu nu is the usual conductivity defined in linear response by j mu equals sigma mu nu e nu, where e is the electric field. Okay, good. So that's the computation we are going to do. And it's interesting precisely because it's rare to find examples where we can compute it both exactly as a function of omega over t and lambda. Okay, so here's the Lagrangian for this theory. The Lagrangian, or the action, is d3x psi bar d mu plus a mu gamma mu psi. Okay, so it's a fermion. It's in the fundamental of SUN. So psi actually has an index, psi I. I goes from 1 to n. A mu is an SUN gauge field, and it also has an action, minus ik over 8 pi integral d3x epsilon mu nu rho. Epsilon is the totally antisymmetric symbol. A mu a d nu a rho plus f a b c by 3 times a mu nu rho a b c. So this is called the Chern-Simons Lagrangian for the gauge field. The mu index is 0, 1, 2, and the a index is in the adjoint of the gauge group, SUN. Okay? So, the physical case, for example, in the fractional Hall effect is actually n equals 1, is just an abelian theory in the fractional Hall effect. And this k is called the level and determines the Hall conductivity of your theory. As far as the non-abelian case, SU2 coupled to fermions is concerned, there is no known condensed matter system which is described by this theory, but you might expect some non-abelian quantum Hall state which is coupled to matter. This is going through a critical point. So this theory is a conformal field theory, so it's massless. So it doesn't describe the fractional quantum Hall phase, but maybe a transition between two of them. So transition between two fractional quantum Hall phases where the theory is gapless. Okay, so the lambda, the Tuft coupling here, is defined by n over k. Okay, and the large n limit is defined by taking n to infinity and k to infinity with lambda fixed. So this is the parameter that remains fixed. Okay, so I will leave that up there as a reference the theory. Oops, too much up. Okay. Good. So the next sort of preliminary to my, I'll write this here so I can also send it up later.
Do you know this is
KFT? Yes, it is known because there are computations of the beta functions that have been done. So this describes the CFT exactly for all lambda.
At large n.
For all lambda, this is a CFT.
Maybe there's no beta function,
right? Yeah, beta function is zero. So you can compute, for example, at two loops and you find that it vanishes. Yeah.
In the large n limit,
yeah.
Is it established in the
zero
n?
Sorry?
What's the statement?
For
any n is CFT?
I think so, it is also, right?
Yeah.
There is no continuous parameter.
Yeah, if you looked at other matter fields, like the, added a quartic interaction, then you would only get a critical point at large n.
Right. I think this is still, yeah. Okay, so the other ingredient we need is the Kubo formula for sigma mu nu. So this theory has a conserved current, which is J mu equals I psi bar gamma mu psi. And sigma mu nu by the Kubo formula is given by limit z is a complex frequency variable. It goes to omega plus I epsilon. The retarded Green's function between J mu and J nu evaluated at z, negative chi mu nu divided by iz. Okay, so what's going on here? There is a complex frequency plane. Okay, and we'll do a Euclidean calculation since we are at finite temperature. And you have all these Matsubara frequencies which are separated by 2 pi t. So you actually do the computation on these points. You analytically continue it to the upper half plane, c goes to omega plus I epsilon. So you compute it at these points, and then you compute it like right here. That's this object. I'll say more about what chi mu nu is later, because it'll play an important role in what I'm going to describe the physical outputs of the calculations. Okay, so that's it. So how do we solve this? How do we compute it exactly as a function of lambda? Is by basically adding up all the Feynman diagrams that matter in the large n limit. So the computation is done in 3 steps. The first step is you compute the fermion propagator. And the set of diagrams that contribute to the fermion propagator are the so-called rainbow diagrams, only these ones. So you have one, you can have one of these, second, third, and so on. Okay? The second step is to compute the exact vertex. And the exact vertex, for example, let's say for J mu, has diagrams of the form like this, where these guys now could be exact propagators with these bunch of rainbows inserted here, here, or here. Okay? You can write down a recursion relation or a Schwinger-Dyson equation for them. It's an integral equation, but the point is you can solve it. And in the last step, what you do is you take this exact vertex that you now computed. So I'll put this exact, okay? And then you make this loop with just one of the bare vertices, and these are also exact propagators. Okay, so you first compute this, you compute this, and then you stitch it together and compute the J mu, J nu two-point function. Okay, so this is a procedure. It's just adding up all the Feynman diagrams that contribute at large n. Okay, so are there any questions at this point? These are the only ones. The caveat that I haven't mentioned is we work in this gauge where A plus, which equals A1 minus I A2 is a zero. So this is a gauge fixing condition that we pick. And what this does is kills the cubic term in the in the gauge field action. So it kills the A cube term, the F A B C A mu A nu A rho, because it's multiplied by the epsilon tensor. So it'll have at least one A plus in this. So in that gauge, that term is not there. And this is really the thing that allows you to add up these Feynman diagrams. This was first discussed in a paper by Cien, Spentavadia, and Shiraz Minwala, this gauge, and then a lot of work was done on it. The system is basically, all the information about the system is because of this clever choice of gauge that gets rid of the cubic coupling. Okay. All right, so now I could write out an ugly integral expression for the answer that we, yeah.
So you're going to do this immediately first?
Yeah, yeah. So you compute it, you know, at all these points in the complex frequency plane, and then you analytically continue.
Are you concerned that this margin may not commute? Is this analytic
continuation? There are no indications that it doesn't. I mean, there are, for example, I'm going to discuss a feature that's present at infinite n, but it's expected to be corrected by 1 over n. So there are no indication that those limits don't commute. For example, one check of that is that Subir Sachdev back in 1997 with Kedar Damle did some computations in the system, but with a U1, and he did them perturbatively in the coupling. And the answers we get basically agree in the perturbative limit to those answers, taking n to 1, you know, naively, and doing the V coupling expansion, and n equals 1 is basically gives you the same answers as just normal perturbation theory. Good. So here are the results. I'll plot them in the end, but let's just discuss some physical features of the results now. So first, let's focus on sigma xx. Sigma xx times 1 over n, okay, as a function of omega over t, has a delta function in omega, first of all. Okay, this is a piece of the answer, and, you know, there's some incoherent background. So we want to explore the physics of this delta function. Why is it there? What does it indicate? Okay. So we notice that the delta function will come basically here if the numerator is non-zero as we take z to 0. Yeah.
I just have a stupid remedial question.
Yeah.
You're working on S Euclidean S1 times R2.
Yeah.
And the theory is conformal. So why can't you just rescale the temperature to be?
Because there's a scale which is the frequency.
Okay.
And therefore the thing that comes is omega over t.
Okay.
I mean, the frequency that you're driving it also has a scale in.
Okay.
That's why the omega over t. Okay. So we see from here that if the numerator is non-vanishing as z goes to 0, we get a delta function, right? Because this is really omega plus I epsilon, and that has an imaginary part, which is a delta function. So d over pi is basically equal to chi xx minus gr xx as omega goes to 0. Okay. So now that brings us to the definition of what these two objects precisely are, because it's subtle. So here, let me add that chi xx, chi mu nu, is the Euclidean correlator, j mu j nu, evaluated at I omega n equals 0, strictly equal to 0. There's no limit. You evaluate the Euclidean correlator at this cross here, and that's chi mu nu. Now, you might wonder, there's some funny business going on, because g retarded was precisely the analytic continuation of these points to the upper half plane, and we are taking the limit omega goes to 0. So the difference between these two terms is essentially a discontinuity in this analytic function in the plane. So the value at omega equal to 0 is different than a value in the neighborhood of 0. And this is important. I'll write down some spectral expansions for these two guys, so it's extremely clear. But I want to belabor this point a little bit because many derivations of the Kubo formula are sloppy and sometimes omit this term. But it's important to note that this is present. For example, for a massless boson, this will be non-zero. In the fermion theory, it's not, you can drop it because it's actually zero. But that's, you know, that's, you have to do a computation to show that. And the subtle point has been overlooked in many treatments that at least I have seen. So we were really confused about it. See, because if this function was continuous at omega equal to zero, right, this numerator would always vanish. And you would never get a delta function. But we know that delta functions in the conductivity are physical. For example, in a free theory, when you apply an electric field, you don't expect the current to decay, right? So in a free theory, you should have a delta function as omega goes to zero. Like that's the DC conductivity of a free theory is infinite.
Right?
The hydrodynamic pole. I don't know hydrodynamics that well, but one caveat here is that hydrodynamics of a metal, for example, is at finite density. So in that, you do have a momentum diffusion that carries along the current with it. But here, the momentum and the current don't overlap because this is a particle hole symmetric theory. Sorry? It does. We never did the computation for finite k, but yes. Yeah.
Why is there a delta function even in the presence of interaction?
Yes, so that's the magic of the Chern-Simons term. So Chern-Simons is a topological theory. So in some sense, you are perturbing the fermion theory. This is a very intuitive argument and not for, you know, rigorous things, but the Chern-Simons term, when added to the free fermion, doesn't do much at large n. For example, the fermion lifetime is still infinite. None of these diagrams have an imaginary part, even at finite temperature. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For example, that a diagram that would contribute to the imaginary part of the fermion is this diagram. If you cut it, you can put particles on shell, but this is down by 1 over n. So this delta function will be smeared out at 1 over n.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you compute 1 over n corrections, it will no longer be a delta function. Yeah. Yeah.
The object that has whose scale anomalous dimension is order of 1 in the large number?
Whose anomalous dimension is order 1.
Different from free theory.
No, so that's the also. So there are these papers by Juan Maldacena and Sasha Jiboadev, which show that the currents of all the conserved currents in the free theory, whose dimensions are fixed by, you know, just conservation equations, only get corrections to order 1 over n. When you add the Tuft coupling. Right. The reason I'm hesitant to say it's the hydrodynamic pole is because you have hydrodynamics even when this delta function is not there. Even if you have a Drude peak, you have hydrodynamics, but there's not the delta function. Right. So even when it's smeared out, there is, you know. So it has to do with conserved quantities, as we will see in a moment. Okay, so let me write down a spectral expansion for chi xx, and then we'll see why these two quantities are not the same. I mean, this is really like linear response theory, but I have not seen it done well in quite a few textbooks. So let me define a function f of tau as the Euclidean correlator j of tau, j of zero. Okay, it's time ordered, but let's take tau to be positive. So let's to be notationally convenient. And this thing, by a pretty straightforward expansion of this guy into the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, is 1 over z times sum over n and m is e to the negative beta e n j n m squared e to the tau en minus em. Okay? I just substituted the definition of g of tau, inserted a complete, two complete sets of energy eigenstates, and you get this. So what's the Fourier transform of this object? If I write here, it's fine, right? So the Fourier transform of this object, f of omega k, and this is periodic with period beta, so it only, the Fourier transform only has discrete frequencies. This is 1 over z, sum over n and m. Okay, so this guy just remains here, j n m squared. This guy gives you e to the minus beta e m minus e to the minus beta e n divided by I omega k plus e n minus e m. Okay, I basically did not do much. I multiplied this by e to the I omega k times tau and did the tau integral from 0 to beta. That gives you this. Okay, so what's chi? Chi we can read off by just setting omega k equal to 0. So chi equals 1 over z, sum over n and m, mod j n m squared. And this is just, you know, e to the minus beta e m minus e to the minus beta e n divided by e n minus e m. Okay? So note that when e m equals e n, that means we are looking at degenerate states. The numerator is 0, but the denominator is also 0. So you get some finite contribution from degenerate states here. Okay? The numerator is 0, but the denominator is also 0. So you do, you know, Taylor expand and you get some contribution. But you see, I don't have to do much here to get an expression for gr of omega. I basically have to replace this I omega k by omega plus I epsilon. All right? So I replace this by omega plus I epsilon. That gives me gr of omega. And now I take omega goes to 0. So you see, now the denominator is no longer 0 because there's an I epsilon. So degenerate states don't contribute to this object, but contribute to this object. Rest of the sum is exactly the same. So let me write here, gr of omega is f of, let me put here I omega k just to be clear, is f of omega plus I epsilon. Therefore, gr as omega goes to 0 is equal to 1 over z sum over n and m en not equal to em mod j and m squared e to the minus beta em minus e to the minus beta en divided by em minus en. Sorry. En minus em. Okay. So is it clear why the equal energy states didn't contribute to this guy? It's because the numerator was 0, but the denominator was not 0. I mean, there was an I epsilon. And therefore, now we see what chi, basic, this object has to be. It's just the sum where I replace this by an equal sign. Okay, so that's the definition of chi. So I'm just going to keep writing. So chi is 1 over z sum over n and m with en equals em j n m squared e to the minus beta en or em, doesn't matter, times beta. Right? Because we do a Taylor expansion, the denominator will cancel and we'll get a beta. So this is it. This is the definition. Now note that this itself can be written as follows. So I'm just going to pull the beta up front. Beta times limit t t0 goes to infinity, 1 over t0, integral from 0 to t0, dt, j of t, j of 0. This is so, see, this is, again, this is clear because for this expression, I substitute here, where instead of tau, it's it, okay? And the time integral is simple. And the only terms that contribute are when en equals em, because otherwise the oscillations kill that correlation function to death, okay? So expand this out. Let me call this equation star. So by star with tau equals it. So again, here there's another physical interpretation. So usually, you know, if the current conductivity is finite, I would expect the autocorrelation function of J to decay, for example, exponentially. But there's a piece here which is growing linearly with T0. That means there's a constant piece in this guy, which when integrated with T0 gives me a T0, and that's canceled by here. Rest everything goes away. So this and this are basically the same object. And now by, so one can check that, for example, this quantity computed at equal times is an inner product. It's a Cauchy, so you can apply Cauchy's inequality and insert complete sets of states. And what that gives you is an inequality for this D. Because, sorry, oh, it's not chi, it's D. What am I writing? Yeah, the chi was this, gr was this. I'm interested in this Drude way. Okay, so this is bigger than or equal to, I'm just gonna restore some factors of the temperature here. Dt over pi is bigger than or equal to sum over ab, jx, qa, cab, qa, qb, dagger, jx. Okay, where CAB is a positive definite matrix. Okay, and the QAs are any set of conserved quantities. Conserved charges. So if the QA charge is conserved, QA of T is QA of zero, so it comes out of this integral again, it cancels. So what this it tells you now is that if you have any conserved operators in your system which overlap with the current, you're gonna get a non-zero Drude weight. That means there's always going to be a delta function whenever the current overlaps with a conserved operator. In metals, for example, if you have an absolutely clean metal, this thing could be a momentum operator, for example. So if you have J and P overlapping, right, then you get a non-zero Drude weight again. And in metals, that translation invariance is broken by disorder or some impurities or defects in your system, which is what leads to a finite conductivity. So, sorry? There's also Umklapp, yes. Sorry?
Even without impurities.
Even without impurities, yes. So there are various different mechanisms that can give you, I was just highlighting one. Yes, it's correct. Okay, so basically we can compute this D exactly as a function of lambda. And in our theory, lambda goes from 0 to 1. And it basically looks like this. So this is the Drude weight over temperature. So it's a dimensionless number, it goes to zero. Here its value is like log 2 over 2, which is the free fermion value also. Okay, so what's nice here is that there are candidates for these conserved charges again. The momentum doesn't overlap with the current here because it's a particle hole symmetric system. But the free fermion theory has spin 3, spin 5, all the higher spin currents are there in this theory. So one candidate QA, for example, comes from J. I mean, this is not important, but J mu nu rho, which is psi bar some set of derivatives, d mu, d nu, gamma rho, psi. So two derivatives and a gamma matrix. So these conserved currents look like this. There are some, you know, plus minus various terms and anti-symmetrized, so on and so forth. I wouldn't be able to write down the exact expression, but it's these objects that exist in this theory that overlap with the current and make it still infinite. Yeah.
There is a slight difference, right, between this theory at zero lambda and a free fermion, because there's this projection to the singlet sector. So you only have psi bar psi as a operator.
Yeah, yeah.
So and that does not affect anything.
I mean, free fermion, I was talking, even if you restrict it to the singlet sector, mm-hmm. this is, I mean, what I said is true. Yeah. I didn't get your question.
Well, I'm just asking whether the same transport you get even without restricting to the singlet sector, if you actually just never gauge the fermion ever.
So that's the limit as lambda goes to zero, right? So that agrees with the free fermion result. No, I'm not sure what that projection is doing to the transport, but the lambda goes to zero result agrees with the free fermions, yeah. Okay, all right. The moral of the story is it's basically still free fermions, but with a little bit of Chern-Simons dust sprinkled around the system. At finite end, this delta function would get smeared out, and it's an open problem to still compute those 1 over n corrections. So basically we did this computation.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there was some integral expression that I can write down at the end.
So basically you have some power of higher spin current that is conserved in the large limit.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, that's a numerical result. It's not an analytic. Yeah. So the way we got it was indirect, is to just do this computation, and the D is basically this numerator as omega goes to zero. So there's no like complete, that's an inequality.
That's not how you compute.
No. I was just saying that inequality shows that it has to be non-zero. But in the large n limit, it has to be non-zero. There's no like an operator sum expansion for D, which we computed analytically, for example. It was partially analytic, partially numerical. At the end, the expression here is a double integral that you have to evaluate numerically. Some functions, but yeah, that's a numerical plot.
Can you
about this inequality?
Yeah.
Okay. So the way it comes out is, let me refer to my notes. Okay. So we will start from this expression for D, which is here. And we will write J. So as I said, this angle bracket defines an inner product. So we will write J as Jx as some coefficient CA times QA plus some operator J tilde, where J tilde is orthogonal to all the Qs. And CAs are, you know, the inner product of JX and QA. And we insert that here. Drop all the J tilde terms. And that's what you get. So you're throwing out, I mean, basically you're projecting the JX operator onto the space of conserved charges. You're throwing out a piece of the operator. So that makes it an inequality. So the CAB matrix comes from these guys, from these CAs in the expansion. And the why the time integral goes away is because since they are conserved, QA of T is equal to QA of zero. So the integral just becomes a number. Okay. Any more questions? Yeah.
In the larger limit, the number of conserved quantities does not depend on lambda. Is it the matrix elements that depends on lambda? What caused the lambda dependence?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
It's a matrix element.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, good. So this was in the sigma xx piece. And I'll draw the plot. Maybe I should draw the sigma xx plots now because I'm going to not talk about it. So sigma xx looks like this when plotted as... So it has both a real part and an imaginary part. So as a function of omega over t, this is real part of sigma xx over n. It has a delta function, of course, which you wouldn't see here. And it has a structure that looks like this. These are different values of lambda. This is lambda equals 0.1. This is lambda equals 0.5. This is lambda equals 0.9. The imaginary part has basically, it's swamped by the 1 over omega piece, which is the Kramers-Kronig partner of the delta function. So it basically start getting things that look like for some values of lambda, there's a feature. And so these are what the curves look like, again, for those values of lambda.
Sorry, the Judah weight's 0 for lambda equals 1.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the curve. You see, as lambda goes to 1, I'll show you why, but as lambda goes to 1, this theory is just, it has just 0. The sigma is just 0 for a reason that I'll point out in a moment. Okay, good. So let's move on to sigma xy. And that also has some interesting physics in it. So I'm not going to use this anymore, so I can bring that down. No, these are very small values. It's there because, you know, the fermions have a thermal mass, and this kind of feature is at twice the value of the thermal mass at that value of lambda. So there's something that happened, but I mean these values are just small but non-zero. Okay. What? Oh. Okay. So what's going on with sigma xy? So for sigma xy, the interesting bit is actually already present just in the t equal to 0 computations, which were already existing in the literature before we wrote our paper. So for sigma xy, let's just focus on t equal to 0, which means omega over t equals infinity. So at t equal to 0, we have Lorentz invariance, which is unbroken. So the j mu, j nu two-point function in general, you know, can be written as some number tau times p mu p nu minus delta mu nu p squared divided by absolute value of p. So this part we are not going to be interested in. This is what gives you sigma xx. What we're going to be interested in is this piece, kappa over 2 pi epsilon mu nu rho p rho. Okay? So just to be clear, if I put jx jy here, the epsilon picks out j0, so this is omega. So jx, jy divided by omega is the Hall conductivity. So this kappa is the Hall conductivity of your theory. So kappa equals Hall conductivity. Okay. Now, I'm just going to give you the value for kappa. And I'm going to put a symbol F here for fermion. It's equal to, and everything will get an F label now, N fermion over 4 lambda fermion sine squared pi lambda fermion over 2. Okay, well, this is some answer. You say, what's wrong with it? What's wrong is that in these large N Chern-Simons theories, there is a conjectured strong-weak coupling duality. So if I take Chern-Simons plus fermions. That has been conjectured to be equivalent to Trin-Simons plus actually a boson field. And the parameters here match as lambda b is equal to lambda f minus 1. So let's assume lambda f is positive, just for convenience. Otherwise, it's plus 1, but it doesn't matter. And what happens here is that nb over lambda b is minus n fermion over lambda fermion. So remember, n by lambda was the level k. So the k's are related by a minus sign. And when lambda fermion is close to 1, this is close to 0. So it's, the boson theory is perturbative when the fermion theory is strongly coupled. So you should expect that a physical quantity like a Hall conductivity should agree between the fermion and the boson. OK, so let's look at what's the answer for the boson theory in the literature. If you look, is nb over 4 lambda b sine squared pi lambda b over 2. OK, now this thing just does not agree. So when you, let's substitute that in and compute kappa fermion minus kappa boson. So this prefactor gets a minus sign. So we're actually adding them up. The sine squared becomes a cosine squared because it's lambda b is lambda f minus 1. So you actually get nf over lambda f divided by 4. So it's not 0. It's not even an integer. So in these Trin-Simons theories, n over lambda, because of certain topology reasons, is constrained to be an integer. So this actually belongs to integers divided by 4. And this is very puzzling because it means it's not, you know, it's not agreeing. So either there is something wrong with the duality or there's something wrong in these computations. And what's missing is actually the so-called parity anomaly term. These theories in three dimensions suffer from the parity anomaly, and you have to be careful about those terms. So I'll explain what parity anomaly means in a while. But let me just write down the full answer, including those terms. Plus nf over 2 plus nf lambda fermion over 4. And here it's n boson lambda boson over 4. And when you take these answers into account and you substitute, OK, it's going to be a little bit non-trivial to see that it actually works because, you know, n over lambda maps to n over lambda, but n times lambda is something else. So they will agree. OK, so now in the rest of the talk, I'm just going to explain what these terms are and where they come from. Are there any questions?
Sorry, you said k is basically restricted to be integer?
Integer, yeah. This is for topology reasons that I don't want to go into right now. Even for the U1 Trin-Simon, like, it's like the integer quantum Hall number is quantized. Okay, so what's this parity anomaly and why do we care? So I'm going to just explain it in the free fermion. That means this lambda is 0. So if you notice, even in the free fermion, there is this nf over 2 piece that's there. So you have to explain like what's going on. So that thing starts with the following observation that. I'm going to get rid of these. Oh, they're not really. That I can generate correlation functions of J by the following effective action. So let me call this W of A. Let me not call it B. B mu is equal to the S that was previously there plus J mu, B mu. Okay, so I couple in some gauge field, and I path integrate over all fields. Okay, path integral over all fields. Sorry, this is terrible. D psi dA exponential of negative S of psi comma A minus j mu b mu. Okay? So psi and a are being integrated over, b is not, so what's left over is a function of b. And all the correlation functions of j, are given by b derivatives, are given by ddb on log of w. Okay, this is just the usual generating function trick. So let's see, where do we get a term like this from? So basically, after I do the path integral, so if log of w has a term like kappa over 2 pi, epsilon mu nu rho, b mu d nu b rho, right? Let's say it has such a term. Then when I take two derivatives with respect to b, I basically get epsilon mu nu rho p rho. Right? There's a 4 here because the derivative acts twice on b. Okay? So what I'm claiming is that such terms, the Hall terms, come from Chern-Simons terms in the background gauge field in the effective action. Okay? But what do we know about kappa? This kappa, again, is an integer. I mean, it has to be an integer for you to preserve gauge invariance in the B field. And you may not demand that of your theory, but it's nice to have, to be able to, again, let's say you wanted to gauge this U1 symmetry and couple it to something else. So there's a constraint here that this kappa must be an integer. Okay? Sorry, B is abelian. Yeah, it couples to J mu, which is a U1. Even abelian Chern-Simons levels are quantized to be integers for a different reason than the non-abelian ones, but it's the same quantization. Okay, so why this half? Like, what's the half? The half basically comes.
What is this?
So let's take a free massive fermion. Okay, this is the new thing. And compute its two-point function. So I compute this diagram. Okay, with a fermion with a mass. Where these insertions are J mu and J nu. That's it, that's the only diagram. Right? And just to have a flavor of what this is integral d3q over 2 pi cubed trace of gamma mu q dot gamma plus mass divided by q squared plus m squared gamma nu q minus p dot gamma plus mass divided by q minus p squared plus m squared. Okay? These two are the propagators, this one and this one. These two are the current insertions. Okay, now we just go ahead and compute this and isolate a term proportional to the epsilon tensor. Okay, and what you will find is that it's epsilon mu nu rho, 1 over 2 pi, mass divided by momentum p. P is the external momentum here, q is the loop variable, m over p, arc sine of mod p divided by square root of 4m squared plus p squared. Okay, that's it. I mean, it's not that long. It's a three, four line calculation. So now let's look at this in the UV limit and in the IR limit. IR means what? That the mass is very large. The momentum is very small compared to the mass. So if the mass is large, we get here p over 2m. Arc sine is linear, so it cancels this. You get a pi over 2. So I may not have all the 2 pi's right, but in the IR, you get kappa equals a half. In the IR, that is. Because the p over m dependence cancels out, and you get a pure number. In the UV, you get 0, because in the UV, p is large, so this is arc sine of 1, which is pi over 2. And this is m over p is suppressed in the UV because p is very large, so you get 0. Now, why is this puzzling? This is puzzling because the IR theory is gapped. I mean, you gave it a mass and you've flown to the IR, so you should expect kappa to be zero in the IR. There's nothing in the theory. Therefore, what you say is that the free massive fermion action, S is psi bar L. L is psi bar d mu gamma mu psi, is not the complete story. If you want to generate correlation function of J, you have to add a background term, B veg dB. With a coefficient that's 1/2/4π, or let's say -1/2/4π. Okay, so when you compute this, you actually get 1/2 minus an explicit 1/2 from that term. So you actually get zero, or here you get 0 -1/2 = -1/2. Now, this could have been like -3/2 or +1/2. The integer part actually doesn't, you can't fix it. That's like an extra input that you have to provide. But what's fixed is that the fractional part of this coefficient has to be 1/2. The integer part can float, it can be anything. So this is like a pure counter term, right? It's not a dynamical field. B is not a dynamical field of our theory. And we expected that the action should have depended only on psi. Well, there's also, you know, J dot B. So the moral of the story is you don't just have to add J dot B, you also have to add B veg dB with the coefficient at the appropriate fractional part to get the correct answer. And that NF over 2 is basically this 1/2 multiplied by N for the N fermions there are. And the NF lambda F comes because you repeat the same calculation but in the presence of a Trin-Simons coupling. So you have diagrams like this, and when you compute right, because a finite lambda, J mu, J nu is not just, so you give the fermion a mass in the presence of a Trin-Simons coupling, and that's what gives you that NF lambda F over 4, and similarly for the boson theory. So, yeah. And after you add those terms, the bosonization works perfectly. I mean, it agrees. I mean, the difference, kappa fermion, kappa boson, if it's an integer, it's fine. We don't expect to be able to match that.
This is the value you're talking about?
Yeah. So it's a 3D bosonization where in 2D bosonization, we know that psi is the e to the phi, right? It's some kink in the phi field. But in this 3D bosonization, we don't have an explicit map of field variables. But we have that these correlation functions agree exactly. The spectrum of the theories agree, and the correlation functions agree. And this duality is even conjectured to hold at finite n, but the evidence there is much weaker. So I was really bad at citing people in this work. I mean, there's a lot of work in this field by Ofer Aharoni's group with his students Guy Gurari, Rania Kobi. There's groups in India that have worked on this. Juan Maldacena was involved. Jorge has worked on these theories also. It's built up. Yeah, the other evidence for these conjectures comes from free energy computations and so on. But so let me just leave you with the plots of the Hall conductivity. Again, because we computed them and, you know, the plots in the end turned out to be, you know, not so interesting because Subir in his 1997 paper had plots which were, you know, perturbative in lambda, and the shape of those look exactly the same as our plots. So like all this Schwinger Dyson stuff, you know, making it exact in lambda doesn't change the shape of these curves too much, but you uncover this extra structure. So the functions of omega over t is sigma xy real part 1 over n. Look something like that. Again, this is lambda equals 0.1, lambda equals 0.5, lambda equals 0.9. And there's an imaginary part. this thing can go negative, and it does. There's no positivity condition. Okay, this is what these things look like. And the perturbative plots for n equals 1 look more or less the same. Okay, good. With that, thank you, and I can take more questions. Yeah?
Do you have any intuition on how it's going to work with the correction to the delta function?
The 1 over n corrections.
Like, what order do you expect to see the result?
No, even just 1 over n would be, yeah, just the next two leading order would already give you a finite lifetime. And actually, Subir and Kedar's work in back in the late 90s was actually to compute those corrections. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. They did some Schringer-Keldysh type diagrammatic analysis on the double contour, had these, you know, Keldysh and the retarded and the advanced self energies and so on. No, see, large N really helps you here because we used a lot of structure that I didn't go into, you know, the structure of these equations and the reason why you're able to solve it. I mean, large N plays a big role because at 1 over N, first of all hell breaks loose even in the diagrams. It's not clear whether what the Schwinger-Dyson equations are or this gauge is useful anymore, things like that. So just the entire machinery of doing this, you know, it just doesn't go over to 1 over N effects. There's a new infinite class of diagrams that you need to add up. And to my knowledge, even the propagator, the fermion propagator, has not been computed to 1 over n in these theories. It's just the integral equations are not written down or are very hard. You have to resort to some weak coupling approximation on top of that to just restrict yourself to two or three diagrams in the self energy of the boson. But yeah, it's an interesting question to wonder, you know. Yeah, so I mean, we have some, you know, speculation in our paper on that. So basically, those conserved currents, for example, those QAs, I mean, there are well-defined expressions for them. And you know, I don't know if all the anomalous dimensions are known, but you could try to compute the anomalous dimensions of those charges at order 1 over n. For all the spins. Okay, I'm just not aware of the literature. Maybe they're known as a function of spin, but yeah, you could maybe try to use that those currents and get a bound for the amount of. But yeah, we didn't. You expect a similar delta function if you compute the stress tensor correlator, which would give you the shear viscosity, for example. It would be very similar calculation, but just yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that finite n, as you said, all hell breaks loose. If your system behaves hyperdynamically, then statistical fluctuations will also induce logarithmic singularities in small regions, not just this.
Yeah, it's completely possible, yeah.
So the very, like, the Huber formula would just be
there. The Huber formula, I think, is always there. I mean, this is linear response, but maybe the way you take the IR limit is subtle and so on. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you have to put some IR regulator and so on and so forth. Yeah. You had a question?
Right. I mean, I also know that these theories have phase transitions in them. So I'm curious, as you change the temperature, at least the free energy has phase transitions. So I'm curious.
Yeah, so those phase transitions are when you're on S1 times
right.
S2.
Right.
But here, the large S2 limit has been taken first.
So I was about to say, if you restart it,
no, then you probably wouldn't be able to do this computation on a finite S2. Because again, we used k equal to 0 quite heavily here. This correlator, I mean, we computed it at k equal to 0 because at finite k, we couldn't. So it really helps that in condensed matter, people are interested in the k equal to 0. You know, in the conductivity, it's the k equal to 0 mode that counts. So if you make S2 finite, I don't know. Yeah, another comment that I should add is, you know, in these integrals, when you have integrals here, you have the momentum integral and you have the frequency sum. The way we regulated is we did the frequency sum first, and then you can do the angular integral in the k1, k2 plane, and then you put a hard cutoff on the radial k, on the absolute value of k. That's the way you regulate this problem. But also, I should point out that there's an important feature that in this limit where the space is R2, is S1 times R2, the gauge field profile, there's a background value of the gauge field. I mean, I didn't say it here. It's because the theory is deconfined and there's a holonomy. I don't know. It just basically ends up changing. You know, there's a K integral. There's a sum over omega n's. You get an extra integral, which is an integral over the flavor index I. So in the large n limit, the sum over I becomes an integral, and it's important to sort of keep that. So this is like integral over I. And things depend on I, because the background gauge field has a profile that's different for the different flavor indices. So it's actually like four things that you have to do. Yeah?
Just as a fun exercise, do you guys compare this holography?
With holography, the holographic duals of these things are these unwieldy higher spin Vasiliev. Sorry?
If you pretend that you don't do the higher spin holography, but the normal holography, you get
the normal holography.
The
M2 brain theory is the ABJM theory, right? But that would have at least two gauge groups. So the diagrams would be different.
No, I'm not looking for what the data
would be. Okay.
What the data features.
So for example, the delta function would be there again because it's if it's a clean holographic system. But I'm not sure beyond that what to expect, because I mean these models are simple precisely because they're of a vector nature. Mostly of a vector nature. If you have bifundamentals or matrices, the large n limit itself is not solvable. So, yeah.
No questions? So you mentioned that
So let me explain that. So if we look at the change of variables between lambda f and lambda b, so we see that as lambda f goes to 1, lambda b goes to 0. So to have the second equality match, we must also have nb equal to 0. So the left-hand side of minus nf over lambda f is non-zero as lambda f goes to 1. And lambda b is going to 0, so nb must also go to 0. So it's the fact that the dual theory has this nb, which is going to 0. So there's a dual explanation for it, which is that... Sorry, does that make sense? Let me write. So if I take lambda f goes to 1, nb, which equals negative nf over lambda f, times lambda b, this thing goes to 0. So it's like the dual theory has no matter. Nb is the number of bosons in the dual theory. So there's just nothing there in the theory. So this lambda equals 1 theory is kind of empty because of that reason. So everything, even the conductivity, the complete function, you know, the ones that I drew, they just approach 0. Like the entire function is just 0 as lambda equals 1.
About free energy or specific
heat? Sorry?
How about specific heat?
Or free energy. Yeah, those computations, George might know better.
Free energy goes to 0 and lambda goes to 1.
Yeah.
So the theory and the stress energy, this the moment, yes, the energy moment tensor two-point function goes to 0 as well. So the theory becomes topological. Yeah, the theory becomes pure transcendence.
Yeah. So that theory has no Hamiltonian, like there's no excitations.
So is this duality in between two low energy limits, or is it?
Oh, these are two CFTs that are dual.
So
at any lambda, so there was no mass here, right?
At finite frequency, could be different. Is that
right? Yeah, so what we checked here was that we checked that if we did the boson calculation, I can put like the fermion and the boson results on top of each other. and they match perfectly at any frequency. So this actually provides you a function's worth of checks on the duality. You know, earlier checks were just numbers like the coefficient in the TT two-point function at zero temperature, the free energy on S1 times S2. Here, well, the free energy on S1 times S2 is a function, but there's an entire function's worth of checks on this duality as a function of omega over T. So yeah.
All right.
Thank you.